Welcome to Theology Simply Profound, a podcast of Reformed Forum. This is episode 328. Well, welcome back to another episode of Theology Simply Profound. My name is Bob Tirullo. I serve as pastor of Westminster Orthodox Presbyterian Church in Countryside, Illinois. And with me via that wonderful internet connection that we normally call Zoom or some other video resource, we have Rob McKenzie. Hey, Rob. Rob serves as an elder here at Westminster. How's it going?
Fine.
There? There you are. Hey.
That was okay.
Okay.
What?
Yeah? Who, what?
I don't know. I was so confused. Yeah, I'm just lamenting right now because it's just pouring rain.
Well, oh, you guys still got
it
rain?
It was down pouring. There. Yeah, we still have rain. So it's actually not pouring like it was, but it's just drizzling. But
yeah.
I had planned on mowing the lawn at some point today, but I guess I can't do that. What a shame!
What a shame! What a shame! I did mine on Monday.
Okay.
But you have a lot more than I have. So I do. Probably have to do like one section on one day and another section. And this is because he lives in a palatial estate. If we haven't said that in the past, with a moat, and he, you know, grows frogs in there, and the frogs keep away the critters. They're like protection.
Yeah, it's, I actually do, mow my lawn in sections.
Yeah.
So I can usually it's three. I've got three sections, so I'll do about three 45-minute sessions while I'm trying to battle the weed that other people call grass.
The weed, yes. Yeah, it is, you know, in some context, it could be considered a weed, an invasive species from another world.
It is.
It is, yeah. It'd be much better if we had clover lawns. Wouldn't it?
Why?
Why? Well, you,
why?
Wouldn't have, you wouldn't have to mow them. That's one reason. Right?
Wouldn't.
And it'd be great for the bees.
I guess.
It'd be great for the bees. Yeah, for pollinators. Clover. You know, the little white things that come up and, you know, bees love them. And, you know, you have clover honey.
Okay.
I see just a blank stare.
Yeah, I don't know what you're talking about.
This is for all the bee lovers out there, like me, and honey. Like, and this is... It's either that or a dandelion.
We pretty much have that.
Dandelion lawn? Yeah. I mean, yeah, those are the other early pollinators.
That's as Melody like wakes up in the morning.
And she goes to water the dandelions?
She wakes up and she just goes, dandelions.
Oh,
I know she hates them.
She hates them. She should just pick them and make like dandelion tea out of them or something.
No, nobody does that. Nobody does that except people that are poor and living in 1927 in Kansas. That's who does that.
I thought that was Dust Bowl country at the time.
That's the only thing. Dandelions grow everywhere. They grow through anything. They're like cockroaches.
They're like cockroaches, yeah. Oh, goodness. Hey, have you seen the announcement? Usually we put this at the end of the broadcast.
Oh, yes.
But did you see the announcement of the Reform Forum Conference?
I did.
Yes. The things concerning himself, Christ in all the scriptures.
Is that a different venue?
Is it at a different venue?
It's a different venue.
Lakeland Church, Gurnee. Oh, I had not noticed that. Lakeland Church, Gurnee, Illinois. Oh, wow. I that's a new thing to me. I did not notice that.
And hold more people.
Yeah. Can hold more people. And it's got a great lineup. To people that we typically, you know, see, Lane Tipton, Jim Cassidy. But the newcomer from last year is billed again, Carlton Wynn. Mm-hmm. And we have another newcomer this year, although he's known to Reform Forum fans, Dan Ragusa, as well, of course, Camden will be closing us out. But yeah, it looks pretty darn good, if I do say so myself. I really like this topic, and I'm looking forward to it. So anyway, I wanted to put that out there. So, because I'm sure, yeah, you can register now for it. Our 2025 annual theology conference, The Things Concerning Himself, Christ and All the Scriptures, Reformed Forum Conference, Lakeland Church, Gurnee, Illinois, September the 27th. September 27th. All right. Yeah. Yeah. All right.
Oh, dear. Well, I'm just going to do a hard cut here.
Yeah.
So we're talking about Daniel.
Sorry, everybody. You know, I remember when laughing like this on, and you know, when we just were not comfortable at all doing, and now I'm just like, ah, hello, everybody.
Now you don't even care.
We gotta get
more clever in our.
All right. We're doing the prophecy of Daniel. Yes. All right. Here we are. Let's go.
Right. Well, speaking of dandelions and vegetarian diets.
Oh my goodness.
Perhaps it would be best if you would read Daniel verses 8 to, I think it's 17, the end of the passage here, and we can discuss pretty well known story.
I'll do through 16, I think. Unless you want me to go all the way to the end of the chapter.
I think you might as well.
Okay. Daniel 1, beginning at verse 8. But Daniel resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food or with the wine that he drank. Therefore, he asked the chief of the eunuchs to allow him not to defile himself. And God gave Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs. And the chief of the eunuchs said to Daniel, I fear my lord the king, who assigned your food and your drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king? Then Daniel said to the steward whom the chief of the eunuchs had assigned over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, test your servants for 10 days. Let us be given vegetables to eat and water to drink. Then let our appearance and the appearance of the youths who eat the king's food be observed by you, and deal with your servants according to what you see. So he listened to them in this matter and tested them for 10 days. At the end of 10 days, it was seen that they were better in appearance and fatter in flesh than all the youths who ate the king's food. So the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. As for these four youths, God gave them learning and skill in all literature and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all visions and dreams. At the end of the time, when the king had commanded that they should be brought in, the chief of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. And the king spoke with them, and among all of them, none was found like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore they stood before the king, and in every matter of wisdom and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. And Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus. All right, so just FYI, one verse I read, and it ended in a period, but I kind of read it as though it was a question, so my apologies there. That was, I think that was verse 10. So.
Yeah, no, I think it's okay, because that's the thing. This is a very famous story.
A lot of people know
the story. This is a great one when you're a kid in Sunday school, and you get this one, and the fiery furnace, and Daniel in the lion's den. I mean, those are just choice stories, always exciting. to look at those things, especially, you know, for little kids, because you get to make all sorts of cool arts and crafts, you know, of people being thrown into a furnace and lions devouring people. I mean, what better kids crafting do you need than things like that? It's interesting though that we really don't understand exactly what it means that Daniel and his three friends want to make this change in their diet, mm-hmm. because they don't want to defile themselves. Daniel doesn't want to defile himself.
Yeah.
But when you read different commentaries, nobody really understands exactly what that means. I mean, we probably have an understanding of some of the probabilities.
Yeah.
But there's nothing ever laid out specifically for us.
Yeah. Well, we don't have an exact knowledge, right? So, you know, the general debate is whether or not this was food that they couldn't eat because it wasn't prepared to Levitical standards or, you know, ceremonial standards that God had given to his people. Or is it food that is being sacrificed to idols or in some way prepared before idols and such that that Daniel and his friends felt that if they ate it, it would defile them. And you know, those are the I think the two, and some will go on one side, some will go on another. As you and I were discussing beforehand, we both, the one commentary we both brought out was E.J. Young commentary on Daniel. Mm-hmm. This is a classic, I think, Reformed commentary on Daniel. And E.J. Young, an OPC minister and professor of Old Testament at Westminster Theological Seminary for decades, he wrote a pretty standard commentary and has some sort of separate pieces on the book of Daniel as well. He actually quotes from Kyle, from the famous Kyle and Delitzsch commentary series on this particular matter. And he does come down on the side of it being sacrificed to idols. And let me just read that real quickly here. He says, to have partaken of the king's food and wine would, in Daniel's opinion, have involved self-defilement. The reason for this has been admirably expressed by Kyle. And this is now Kyle quote. The partaking of the food brought to them from the king's table was to them contaminating because forbidden by law. Not so much because the food was not prepared according to the Levitical ordinance, or perhaps consisted of the flesh of animals, which to the Israelites was unclean. For in this case, the youths were not under the necessity of refraining from the wine. But the reason of their rejection of it was that the heathen at their feasts offered up in sacrifice to their gods a part of the food and the drink, and thus consecrated their meals by a religious rite, whereby he who participated in such a meal participated in the worship of idols. But the meat and the wine as a whole were the meat and the wine of an idol sacrifice, partaking of which, according to the saying of the apostle, 1 Corinthians 10:20 and following, is the same as sacrificing to devils. So that's quoting from Kyle, quoting from E.J. Young. So, you know, to be dogmatic would not be right, but I do think there's a good case that could be made that, you know, that could be the reasoning going on there.
Yeah, I was also reading in a different commentary by Ernest Lucas, which is in the Apollos Old Testament commentary series on Daniel.
I don't have that one.
He talks about this too, how there's two kind of different main views that people look at. And he, you know, made a good suggestion that we really should understand this as kind of both views being brought together. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have to be just one. I mean, it is true that the food that would have been brought to before Nebuchadnezzar's table, it would have had blessings being given to it by their deities or for their deities. But also the food coming across, whatever was sent down for these people to eat, more than likely would have had Levitical food laws broken with it. Now, again, we don't know. Maybe they could have been given the food and some of it would have been kosher and some of it wouldn't, and they could just eat the kosher. We don't know.
Yeah, exactly.
But in one sense, I see Daniel here kind of taking a preemptive view as well, that he's going to take a stand at the beginning, him and his friends, and that way they aren't going to be defiled through the meat offered to idols, and they're going to be able to protect themselves from the kosher laws, that they'll be able to not eat food that they're not supposed to eat according to Leviticus. And I thought that was well said by Lucas, that we should try to mesh these together a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I think last week we mentioned that it could be both and, either or. No reason to be dogmatic on it. But to my knowledge, there isn't any food laws that restrict wine. Is that?
Right. That's right. Lucas brought that out as well. Are none.
But to defile yourself with wine. So, you know, that could be why one might lean stronger on another. But I think, generally speaking, that's right. And I think we did mention it last time. But that's another good point, though, that you brought out, that, you know, okay, right at the beginning, they resolve themselves, it's Daniel who resolved that he would not defile himself with the king's food. So you have this resolution of character coming straight at the beginning of this prophecy, this historical section of Daniel's prophecy. just telling us what kind of man Daniel is by his actions, right? As well as the other three friends. And so it, right from the get-go, we see that there is this distinction among these four individuals as they come to the king's house and as they come to serve in the king's palace, that they will be different. They will be set apart from the world. And no matter what happens to them, they're entrusting themselves to the Lord. And, you know, like I like how, and I'm sure there's other lots of good ways that it's been said, but I like the heading that E.J. Young puts on this section, and that is the first triumph of God's grace in Babylonia. And it's, you know, we can focus on Daniel and his resolve and the kind of character he has and everything, but you see that the Lord sustains him and the other three guys through this. And so we see the triumph of God's grace in and through Daniel that God does in the situation, because he sustains them on a relatively, well, a less nourishing diet. I mean, even, you know, modern times we see it, generally speaking, a less nourishing diet than meats and, you know, poultry and fish and things of that nature, than just vegetables. But these guys are spoken of as being fatter, you know, having more meat on their bones, so to speak, after the 10 days, just being fresher, more healthy looking in appearance, whatever that, you know, meant to Nebuchadnezzar or to the eunuch at that time. But, you know, one thing I've noticed is a lot of people that do, you know, Bible diets. I've not seen this one come about.
Oh, well, I mean, I was going to ask you if you're advocating for vegetarianism or if you believe that the Bible is advocating for vegetarianism.
No, but I've never heard anyone say I'm going to do the Bible diet or the Bible Daniel diet and it be, you know, just eating these vegetables, you know, vegetables and without and no wine. So
But there are Christians that are vegetarians, so it's not as if.
No, that's true. My point is, I don't think I've ever heard them use Daniel for that, though. I mean, I could be wrong.
There's got to be a book.
There's got to be a book. The Daniel Diet, How to Eat Vegetarian Bible Study.
If there isn't one, then that's an opening in the market right there. Because there's all sorts of Bible diet books out there. I think it's one of the really interesting things within this section is not just that here Daniel and his friends are standing up and they're trying to protect themselves from food that might be offered to idols, but also making sure that they're not going to violate the kosher laws. But we are told that God gives them this standing mm-hmm. amongst the eunuchs, but we're specifically told that that's God, you know, and in verse 9, and God gave mm-hmm. Daniel favor and compassion in the sight of the chief of the eunuchs.
Yeah.
So we see this sovereignty of God in his protection of his people, but also in the favor of his people. And, you know, here they've been taken captive, right? I mean, was God not favoring Daniel when he was taken from his home and brought to Babylon? And now he's going to bring him back. You know, how do you do that when bad things happen, right? To good people, when bad things happen to God's people.
Well, I think,
how do we view that?
I still think God can. I'm sorry. I interrupted you, Rob. I'm sorry.
Yeah, just that. Do we ever think that God has removed his favor from us if bad things happen, like being taken to another country?
Well, I certainly think we think that. Yeah. Whether or not that's the case is another story. So, and this is where we often get confused when something happens to the people of God as a whole for their disobedience, which is certainly the case, is what's going on here with the southern kingdom of Judah.
Right.
But then you have those within the kingdom who are faithful. So how goes the king and the country also goes the people. But there are remnants of God's faithful within, and that's by God showing them favor. And so, yeah, that, you know, I mean, we don't know how Daniel acted before all of this. Maybe he was a snotty little brat. You know, I don't know. But maybe the Lord changed him in the midst of being carried off to Babylon. There's no way for us to know one way or the other, right? But at some point here and now, and how this kid has grown up and learned, I mean, I doubt what I said, right? I don't anyone quote me on that. Right? But he is now someone whom God has showing favor to. I have assumed and have no reason to doubt that he has always shown Daniel favor as a youth and growing up, and the privilege of learning from others and growing up, you know, I think, you know, in the I'm trying to with the, as a person of royal family and nobility, and here the favor that God is showing, the compassion, is that the chief eunuchs are showing that favor and compassion upon Daniel and the friends. So the favor that God is showing to Daniel is reflected in how the chief eunuchs are treating them. The chief eunuchs, or the chief of the eunuchs, I should say, this is a singular individual, not multiple, is showing them a favor and compassion, right? It's their job. Well, it's the eunuch's job and the chief of the eunuch's job to take care of these individuals, these four, but probably more, in order to have them presented in a particular way within the palace, in the king's throne room, you know, walking around. They need to have a certain ability. They need to have certain manners. They need to look a certain way, right? And if they were to look weak and spindly, discolored, you know, if you don't get it right nourishment, you can, you know, kind of look pale or ashen, or if you eat too much, you know, orange things, you'll look orange. eat too many carrots, you're gonna look orange. You know, he's responsible for these things, and so, you know, the fact though that there's a good relationship is really awesome. And yeah, that's a God-given thing that has happened here.
What's interesting about it is that basically they're entering into their college because they're going to be, it's 3 years, and they're learning all the knowledge of Babylon.
Yeah, it sounds like they're disciples. 3 years with Jesus, right? You know,
it does. And they're going to learn all about the religion. They're going to learn about the history. They're going to learn about probably other subjects such as, you know, I don't know, mathematics, you know, whatever kind of learning. So, mm-hmm. Because they want them to be educated. These young men are going to become the advisors to the king. They're going to be emissaries. They're going to represent the kingdom. But they're being trained for that. So like you mentioned a minute ago, court. They're being trained to understand what court is like. Mm-hmm. And what court, the kingly court, is what I'm referring to.
Yeah, yeah.
When Nebuchadnezzar... by the laws of Babylonia, they'll need to learn the laws, but also the decorum of when visiting dignitaries come, when festivals are made, when they need to know all of this. And that's what they're learning right now. And as they're learning, they're given this diet. And, you know, it's this rich food, you know, the best wine. And by the end of the 3 years, having learned and been trained, they would also have been used to the best meats and the best food and the best wine. And their, in one sense, their loyalty to the kingdom would have been completely established. Now, I don't think Daniel or his three friends were ever questioned about whether their actual loyalty to the kingdom, unless it was by people who were trying to have them killed.
But
here the eunuchs, I mean, if you're a eunuch, because there's the eunuch in charge and the other eunuchs, if you present them, like you're saying, mm-hmm. if you bring them 3 years from now and they're sickly and they just look malnourished, and as you said also, actually being malnourished might have stunted their actual learning ability. And so they come before Nebuchadnezzar after 3 years of this kind of malnourishment, and the blame is going to go right onto the people in charge.
Exactly.
And probably they're going to lose their head. I mean, that's probably what would happen.
I have no reason to doubt that. Yeah, I mean, this, I mean, the point is, it's serious. The point is that that's why the eunuch, the chief eunuch, is afraid, right? I mean, this is where I misread this section, but it says, you know, I fear my lord the king, who has signed your food and your drink. For why should he see that you were in worse condition than the youths who are of your own age? So you would endanger my head with the king. So you want me to do this, Daniel? Are you crazy?
Right.
I fear the king. And you know, I've shown you compassion. I've shown you favor. You really want to do this to me? I'm going to die if I present you in a way that is less than the other people because I let you, you know, not eat the king's food. I mean, it's a great privilege to eat of the same food as the king, and you're denying that? So, I mean, I'm going to be blamed for not having you eat the things that you need to eat and to drink the things you need to drink in order to be well presented to Nebuchadnezzar and be in his court and represent his court. And so, yeah, so that's, you know, verse 10 is, you know, you'd endanger my head, as you said, right? Head coming off, whether that's metaphorical or literal. It means death in some fashion. In some fashion. Death is death, sorry.
in the fashion of his head being removed from the rest of his body.
Yeah.
I mean, the favor that God gives to Daniel and his friends here is that the eunuch is willing to do a 10-day test, which is a reasonable thing. He could have just said, look, this goes bad. I'm losing my head. We're not going to try it.
Yeah.
But he likes Daniel, and this is where God, having set this relationship up between Daniel and the eunuch, he's willing to try it for 10 days. And as you know, as you mentioned earlier, at the end of the 10 days, here they're presented. They come in, and the head eunuch's like, these guys look better than anybody else that is going through this regiment. And I've never seen this kind of result before.
Yeah.
So he orders that everybody in this group are now given vegetables and water. And I've seen different renditions of this, or I've heard different sermons of this, as if Daniel and Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego are like the rebels. The rebels of the group. You know, you have like everybody else is kind of mad at them because they just got all the good food taken away and they got the good wine taken away, and now they've got just vegetables and they've got water. But we don't see that in the passage. That's never said, that people are not happy with them that are in their group.
Yeah. So I haven't looked at the passage in a long while in detail, but I don't see that they took it, that everyone eats the vegetables. Is that how you read verse 16? That everyone has to eat the same way that Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego and Daniel eat?
That's how I was taking it from, because they're the nobility and youths that, you know, without blemish, that were taken to Babylon from Israel. I kind of see them as a group, and it could be that it is just talking about Daniel and his three friends. That could be what it's talking about. It seems, now maybe they were the only four in this group, but it seems there was more. And
okay,
they seemed to be the leaders, but that's just conjecture on my part when it comes to, they are, It would seem odd that they were only doing this for those four. It And I guess it would seem odd to me that here the head eunuch looks at them and says, wow, you guys look better than anyone else. You look healthier than anyone else. So I'm just going to do this for you instead of I'm going to do this for the whole group. But that, yeah, I mean, I could see where that's just conjecture.
And
I'm reading into it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I was just taken from verse 11. It's the four of them who are tested. And then down at verse 16, it just says, so the steward took away their food and the wine they were to drink and gave them vegetables. So, I guess that could be understood as a broader group, but then it just goes on, as for these four youths, God gave them learning. So, I always understood it as just the four of them, but you could be right. You know, it could be,
well, I don't know. And I'm kind of going off of sermons that I heard growing up.
And I didn't have any of those.
The rest of the people that were with them were all mad. I mean, that's, you know, as if somebody's like, you know, cutting into a T-bone and all of a sudden it's pulled off the table in front of him and some leeks are placed in front of him. And he's like, what just happened? I won't die on a hill for that, but It is interesting that the eunuch was willing to make this change.
Yeah.
And for the rest of their time, so the 3 years that they're in their school, this is their diet. And in the end, they're brought before Nebuchadnezzar.
Yeah. Which in the end, just so we're clear, is not this diet is not set apart for us as a standard, right? You are allowed to eat meat. Just in case anyone thought otherwise.
I've already, while you were talking a little bit ago, I already wrote half of the book, The Daniel Diet. Can't take that away from me now.
Now, it might be good for you. Maybe you need those veggies, but.
Well, I think you need, now, I don't know how we got here. I think you do need,
you know,
vegetables.
How we did.
I think that
we went on a rabbit trail. That's
right. Because we're vegetarian.
Because of rabbit food. Yeah.
See that. Wow. So Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah are taken to Nebuchadnezzar, and it's just like their final oral exam. I mean, they're being quizzed on different aspects of the knowledge that they've learned for the last 3 years, and their answers are better than Nebuchadnezzar's ever heard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, it's just a wonderful passage, isn't it?
Yeah. Because it doesn't just say, you know, these guys were the best of Babylon, you know, what would it be, 578, you know, the Daniel's a valedictorian of the Babylonian class of 578 BC. It actually says that they are answering better than the advisors, they're called the magicians and the enchanters that were in the kingdom.
Yeah. And we'll certainly see all of that come to fruition later. Right. But right there in verse 20, I mean, the king, they stood before the king and in every matter of wisdom, and understanding about which the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better, not just better than, 10 times better than all the magicians and enchanters that were in all his kingdom. I mean, obviously, this is the favor of the Lord. This is the grace of the Lord providing insight and wisdom into all of the things that the king inquired of them. You know, what those things were, I don't know, right? Were they things of politics, things of nature, things of the created order? You know, who knows exactly what the nature of these things were, but they were trained up in a variety of different things. And those things that they're trained up in, God gave them a particular type of wisdom and understanding to have a depth of insight that impressed the king far more than any of his other magicians and enchanters. And, you know, go Daniel.
And we talked about that if they had come before Nebuchadnezzar and been looked at as sickly and kind of been idiots because their brains had had turned off because they didn't have meat, which is why we should all be meatitarians.
Carnivores.
That's right. So we talked that the eunuch, the head eunuch at least, would have had his head gone. Mm-hmm. And probably the people that were presented, if I don't know if they would have been killed, they definitely would have been turned away from working in the kingdom. They would have been probably sent back to whatever the Jewish population was, and they would have just had to go there. But there's another aspect about this, because we do know what happens. They're head of the class, and they go on to have great influence in Babylon for, what, 60, 70 years, 80, 90, you know, I mean, a long time, not just lasting the Babylonian kingdom, but all the way into Persia.
Yeah, I mean, because right at the end of verse 21, right, we're told the end from the beginning, and Daniel was there until the first year of King Cyrus.
Right.
Right. And so Cyrus comes along, and he's going to be the one who sends the people back to Israel, or back to the land of the promise. Go ahead.
I mean, and that could have also happened if they had come in and just been found to be so-so. I mean, if Nebuchadnezzar had nothing to do with the diet, nothing to do with any of that, just that they had come in and he examined them, and, you know, he's like, oh, okay, they're fine. You know, their influence for the next 70 years or whatever would have been minimized. But God brought them into this situation and created them in such a way that their intellect was such and their character was such that they would do incredible things for him in exile. Mm-hmm. And for the Jewish people as well. And kind of be the representatives of Yahweh at this time to Babylon itself, to the other kingdoms. And, you know, so we can praise God that he brings his people to do incredible things. Now, as we'll see, and as everybody's aware, their lives were in jeopardy throughout their time there. And we don't even know how often maybe they were up against death. We don't know. We were just given the highlights of when they were almost burned to death or almost eaten by lions. Or it's incredible. I mean, even when Daniel goes to interpret the dream of Nebuchadnezzar, as we'll get to, when he goes there, it's basically people are coming to him saying, the king is about to kill all the magicians, all the advisors in all of Babylon. We're all going to die. Mm-hmm. And Daniel's like, you know, okay, let me put my robe on and my good robe, and I'm going to go talk to the king. And he saves people's lives. But we don't know how often that kind of thing would have happened to him. But we see that God is still in the background, right? I mean, we know he's in the foreground, right? He's in control of all things. But we always see God in the background of this book and kind of driving things towards something. And that becomes more and more evident as we get toward the end of the book, what we're being driven toward. But here at the beginning, we see this almost a subtle reference to God gave them favor. God gave them favor in the situation to bring them to a place of influence and authority within the land.
Well, I think we'll close it out for today there. And thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. You can find us at reformforum.org as well. You can go to westminsteropc.org to find out about the congregation that Rob and I serve. Rob, what are we doing next time?
I think we'll continue in the book of Daniel.
All right. Yeah, that's a good idea. Once again, thanks for taking the time to be with us on another episode of Theology Simply Profound. Until next time.